This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. A new report by the United States Commission on Civil Rights, supported by the majority of the commission, says phrases like religious liberty and religious freedom are code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, and Christian supremacy. Well, not everyone on the commission agreed with the findings of the commission, and one of the dissenting commissioners, Peter Kirsenow, joins me in just a moment. And the investigation widens into this past weekend's terrorist attacks. General Jerry Boykin is here for that discussion, along with an announcement that the Navy is launching a new education program, not on how to win wars, but on how to make transgenders feel at home. That's coming up here later on Washington Watch. Folks, I couldn't make this stuff up even if I wanted to. So, listen up. Hey, if you happen to miss anything on your way home, TonyPerkins.com and the place to find it. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. By the way, a little bit later, I got a very thoughtful letter last night regarding our discussion on immigrants coming into the country and from Syria, from Iraq. And I'm going to talk about that. A very thoughtful lady who is actually married to an immigrant was talking about the religious aspects. We're going to talk about that a little bit later here on Washington Watch. Also, we'll be taking your phone calls. Jot down this number, 866-372-7234, the number to call a little bit later when we open up the phone lines. But first, earlier this month, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights released a report, and it's made a lot of news for all the wrong reasons. The commission's report, titled Peaceful Coexistence, Reconciling Non-Discrimination Principles with Civil Liberties, discusses issues like, you know, how do you bring together religious liberty and sexual rights? Well, the chairman, Martin Castro, an Obama appointee, was quoted as saying this: the phrases religious liberty and religious freedom will stand for nothing except hypocrisy so long as they remain code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, Christian supremacy, or any other form of intolerance, end quote. Astounding to hear our first freedom described in such deplorable terms. Joining me now is one of the commissioners of the Civil Rights Commission who took issue with the findings of the commission. He is, in fact, wrote, I thought, a very strongly worded and eloquent rebuttal to this, Peter Kirsenow. Peter, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Peter, I'm just going to start with a couple questions. I read your rebuttal, and it was very, actually, it was a kind of a history of religious liberty and freedom and really what we're faced with in terms of this collision. But I want to pull from some of the things you said. You said this conflict between religious liberty and non-discrimination principles is a profound conflict. Explain that.
Well, I had originally asked for this very hearing to be conducted several years ago because I saw that there was mounting tension. And there shouldn't be really, but there's always going to be some tension between principles of non-discrimination and religious liberty, especially when we've seen this trajectory toward, among other things, gay marriage. And in anticipation of that, this was, you know, years before the Obergefell decision, I knew that we were going to have to take a look at all of the issues pertaining to discrimination versus religious liberty. How can we reconcile the two? And that's why I came up with the title Peaceful Coexistence. That hearing was conducted, or the impetus for it was when the commission, which is an eight-member commission, was evenly divided 4-4 between conservatives and liberals. But it was heard when the commission membership changed because of the Obama administration to 6 liberals and 2 conservatives, and that's why you have the kind of report that you have, along with, of course.
And by the way, just for the benefit, of our listeners, this is supposed to be a nonpartisan or bipartisan commission where no more than I believe they cannot have more than three of one particular party. What's the number?
Yeah, you cannot have a majority of one particular party. You know, it can't be more than four. But what happens is very often people will identify themselves as independents.
Correct.
And you'll end up with, nominally four Democrats, but you'll have six liberals on the commission. That's what we currently have.
You have one. There's one Republican on the commission.
One Republican, that's me, and one independent, Gail Harriet, who's also a conservative.
Right. So it's if you look at it from party affiliation, it's very deceptive, but it clearly is not, as you talk ideologically, it tilts very strongly to the left.
Right. What the concern that Gail and I have, and I think most liberty-loving Americans should have, and most people of faith will have, is the commission's report is really a bellwether. It tells you the direction in which the left goes and how they perceive religion. I don't mean to take a broad brush and smear all folks on the left or all liberals, but remember there's a reason why the mention of God or Jesus Christ was booed at the Democratic Convention back in 2012. There's an advancing, and I don't mean to say this about all Democrats. That's a particularly condensed or specific strata of liberals who are at the convention. But nonetheless, it is clear that there's an advancing agenda on much of the left that is hostile to religion, views religion as an excuse to discriminate against individuals, mainly on the basis of sexual orientation, but perhaps for other reasons, too. That is clear throughout the commission's report and the statements of some of my fellow commissioners. And as a result, what we are starting to see, along with the repercussions of the Obergefell decision and statutes that are being enacted throughout the country, ordinances, edicts coming from the Office of Civil Rights of the Department of Education, is a subordination of religion to principles of quote-unquote non-discrimination. And as a result, I think what you're going to be seeing is that many religious institutions, many traditional observers of religious practice are going to be stigmatized. They will see that many of the things that they took for granted are now delegitimized and maybe can't even be done anymore. And, this is not some type of hysteria on my part. We're already seeing it. There are a number of universities that are being subjected to, requirements to abandon certain practices such as single-sex dorms and other things in order to continue to receive federal aid. There are adoption agencies, Catholic adoption agencies, for example. Catholic Charities of Illinois completely went out of the adoption business because of the state government's position with respect to the requirement that adoption agencies place children in same-sex homes in addition to homes with a man and a woman who are married. So, and it wasn't just Illinois also. It happened in Boston and Washington, D.C. There are other institutions, both academic and for-profit institutions, that have been affected. We saw the type of opprobrium leveled on the pizza shop in Indiana after the state, mini RFRA, which, unfortunately, Governor Pence, he didn't move forward on that, and it was an easy lift. But nonetheless,
right.
Long story short is I think the worldview of the left is starting to be imposed on this country, and I think our first freedom is maybe not completely in jeopardy, but it's going to be circumscribed substantially.
Well, you talk about that, Peter, in your rebuttal. You say, and you do a great job, I think, of explaining these two conflicting worldviews and what's behind them. But you say it requires the left's worldview, this secular worldview, it requires purging the public square of religious symbols, denying the validity of public policy with religious origins, and ending longstanding public religious practices. Is that what we see unfolding?
I think we are, and you see it almost every day. There's something, someplace in the country where the left's worldview is being imposed, and it's happening rapidly. the religious practices that we've taken for granted over centuries and for most of this country's existence are now being stigmatized. Give you one, just one example. In Tennessee, in order to give some space to individuals who are counselors, psychological counselors, psychiatrists, substance abuse counselors, who are traditional religious observers who may not, for example, want to counsel someone that a same-sex practice was permissible. It may have been against the counselor's religion. There was an exemption provided for those individuals, an exemption that would simply say that if a patient sought counseling that the counselor, for religious reasons, couldn't provide or would prefer not to provide, as long as that counselor could make a referral to that patient of someone who would willingly provide those services, that counselor would not be required to provide that type of counseling that would be contrary to his religious beliefs. Well, the left went crazy about that.
Right.
That was not an adequate accommodation. They wanted to mandate that the counselor, regardless of his religious belief and regardless of the type of counseling that was being sought, provide such counseling. And whenever we see an attempt to have such an accommodation, to have a peaceful coexistence, the left or the secularists who are constantly preaching to us, no pun intended, about tolerance, all of a sudden become some of the most intolerant people you want. It's their way or the highway.
Right. We see that repeatedly.
We do. And, you know, for any of your listeners who think that this is a one-off or they're, you know, it's just something that occurs on occasion in some blue state or state far away, it's coming to a theater near you. It's happening all across the country, and it's going to happen with much more rapidity now that we have the Obergefell decision,
right.
All of the things that, you know, Justice Scalia and others had predicted going all the way back to the Lawrence case, and they were laughed at, and people were saying, oh, that's never going to happen. All of a sudden, we're seeing that maybe Scalia wasn't prescient enough.
Right.
He was understating what was going to be happening.
And the media doesn't always report it, so people don't see it. They don't realize how prevalent it is because the media doesn't cover it as much as they do the other side of the issue. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Peter Kiersenau, my guest, he is a commissioner of the United States Commission on Civil Rights, dissenting or taking issue with the findings. And I understand, Peter, you wanted to get this report out there so the public could see what is happening to religious liberty. And we're out of time in this, but I so appreciate you coming on because, I think your rebuttal to the majority was very thoughtful and a well-documented response. And one of the things that you pointed out repeatedly was that the free exercise of religion is a constitutionally enumerated right where the sexual rights are statutory in their creation, other than when you, if you were to point to discrimination laws under the 14th Amendment protections. But Peter, I want to thank you for joining us. Thanks so much, and we're going to have you back on to talk more about this.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate it.
All right. Peter Kiersenau, Commissioner on the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. If for nothing else, and I'm going to get a link up on the website to this where you could at least read his response. It's very informative. Anyway. All right, when we come back, General Jerry Boykin joins us to talk more about the terrorist attacks that took place over the weekend and something new in the Navy. Don't go away.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
On October 6th and 7th, College of the Ozarks in beautiful Branson, Missouri will host the Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty. Confirmed speakers include Dr. Ben Carson, Liberty Institute President Kelly Shackelford, and from the American Family Association, Abraham Hamilton III.
The founders enshrined religious liberty as the first among the freedoms protected in the Bill of Rights because they recognized that the prosperity of the American Republic rose or fell with its religious freedom.
As our nation spirals into a deeper moral pit, this event may reconnect attendees with the intents of the Founding Fathers. It's high time Christians did something to preserve our liberties before they're lost forever. The Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty is designed to inspire participants with a greater resolve through better understanding of the issue. The cost is $50 per person, and student admission is free. More information is available at afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. The website, tonyperkins.com, and there is a link to the report up there on tonyperkins.com. And what you can do is, I'm looking through my papers here. I have a copy of the report in front of me. There's a table of contents at the opening of the report, and you can, if you want to, just read the commissioner's response. And he actually takes, Peter takes each of the points that, their findings, I should say, from the commission and basically rebuts them. And so you will learn both what the findings, the alleged findings of the committee, and a very thoughtful, well-documented response. Again, you can find that at tonyperkins.com. But I do think you need to see this, and I would even encourage you to – it's pretty long. It's like 293 pages. So it like took 30 minutes for my printer to print it. But the – you don't have to print it. You can – it's a PDF. You can look at it online. But I would certainly send a link – to my pastor, if I were you, and let them know that this stuff that we talk about here on a daily basis, these threats are real. They're real. Some people think, oh, it's just talk radio. No, it is real. It's happening. All right, we got to move on here because I've got my favorite general standing at attention, waiting for me to bring him on radio. At ease, General, at ease.
Thank you so much, Tony. I feel better now that I can relax a little bit.
As a Marine sergeant, I always wanted to be able to say that to a general.
Drill sergeant.
All right. General Jerry Boykin, my guest, executive vice president of the Family Research Council, founding member of Delta Force, spent 36 and a half years fighting bad guys in the United States Army. General, what do we know? Any more information coming out about the attacks that took place this weekend, New York, New Jersey, Minnesota?
Well, I think the most significant thing, Tony, is we know that the father of this guy actually went to the police and told them that he thought his son was a terrorist in 2014. He later recanted that, but that is significant, particularly given that this is the same thing that happened with this guy named Abdul Muttalab, that tried to blow up an airplane over Detroit in 2010. His father went to the embassy and said, my son has become a terrorist. And it was ignored both times. And I think it's significant that when you combine that with the fact that he had made two trips to Afghanistan, as well as a trip that could have lasted as long as 11 months into Pakistan, particularly into Quetta, which is the it is a stronghold for the Taliban. It is where the Pakistanis go to actually talk to the Taliban and cut deals. They have a they had a thing a few years ago called the Quetta Shura, which was a big meeting there where they made some deals. When you add all that up, you have to ask, why didn't the FBI or somebody do something about this guy?
Right. And, I mean, this is not a place you would go just to buy Persian rugs or something. This is a place that you would go with a with an intent, most likely, to engage in terrorist-related behavior.
That's right. See, the it's right on the border of Afghanistan. So when the Taliban was under pressure, they would flee to Quetta. It was a safe zone for them. And then they would negotiate deals with the Pakistani government, and they would do their planning, and then they would launch activities out of Quetta back into Afghanistan. And so he had to have a reason to be there, and I don't think that you can come to any other conclusion in a reasonable way than the fact that he was there probably learning how to build bombs, how to do a variety of different things that would be important to him being able to carry out the kind of attack that he carried out there.
Now, we do have very smart people in our intelligence community, but we've got a problem if we fail to connect the dots, and I don't think it's that we're not connecting the dots, it's we refuse to acknowledge what the dots and the lines lead to. And it's the political correctness. It's keeping us from keeping America safe.
That's right. Remember in 2012, a couple of Islamic groups, which are known front groups for the Muslim Brotherhood, and they are right here in America, like the Islamic Society of North America and the Council of American Islamic Relations, insisted that they review the training curriculum that the FBI used to train its agents on how to recognize and deal with Islamic terrorism. And they expunged the 1,000 pages from that. Robert Mueller let them do that. And our dear friend, Michelle Bachmann, went over and looked at all of the 1,000 pages there. And she said, I met with her right afterwards. She says she was absolutely appalled that they had taken things out of the training curriculum that were right out of the Quran and Hadith. That is what we're dealing with an administration that will not allow the FBI to know the enemy and certainly will not allow them to deal with the enemy when they have ample and sufficient evidence to do something.
Well, and we had the president, you know, not even addressing this issue until, I don't know, 48 hours afterwards, and still reluctant to acknowledge what this was, that there's clearly a connection with where this guy has been and what he did.
Yeah, and what's so ridiculous about this, Tony, is that they are now saying, well, he's not connected to any larger group or any cell. Really? Does anybody believe that anymore? I mean, what was he doing in Kuwait? What was he doing in Afghanistan? He's not connected to any larger group. This whole idea of a lone wolf is just an absolute specious notion, because what's happening is these people are being radicalized, and then they're being trained, and then they're being sent on solo missions. But for all we know, this guy may have also had some help, but it doesn't matter. This guy was a terrorist that was inspired by ISIS and other groups like ISIS, and he's part of their network. So to say that he's not associated with any terrorist group, that he was a lone wolf, is ignoring the reality of what we're up against here, and we've got to stop that.
Hmm. General, can you hold on? We're up against a break, but I want to yes. talk to you about another story. The Navy this week announcing a new training program. Not on how to fight and win wars, but something else. So I want to talk with you about that on the other side of the break. So, General, you can stand at ease, but I'll be waiting for you on this side of the break. All right, folks, don't go away. The General's standing by, and I hope you will as well. We're going to return and talk about the Navy, an announcement of new training. This may shock you. Then again, under the Obama administration, probably nothing shocks you. That's when we come back here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, here's something interesting coming out this week. Apparently, as everyone is waiting for the Federal Reserve to see if they're going to raise interest rates, the vast majority of economists polled believe that it's extremely unlikely the Fed is going to raise interest rates. Boy, there's a news story for you. That's breaking news, I guess, to some. We talked about this for 2 months, and I haven't believed for a moment that there was going to be any chance of the Federal Reserve raising interest rates unless Janet Yellen is just sick and tired of her job. She doesn't want to do anything to help Donald Trump, make Donald Trump look any better than he might, because, of course, if they raise rates, the markets are going to go down. It is confirmation that there is no real footing underneath this market. It's confirmation that the underlying fundamentals of the economy are still terrible. The Federal Reserve, some are saying, is likely to hold interest rates because of disappointing economic data. Come on. The economic data has been disappointing now for years. Every once in a while, we get this, well, good job numbers, or we get a little bit of economic data, and there hasn't been much, considering productivity and so many other things have been down. We're still in deflationary mode, but right now, economic data is down? It's poor? Look, the idea that the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates in this environment is lunacy. But look, we've got a 4.9% unemployment. Is the Federal Reserve saying what I've been saying for years, that the 4.9% unemployment rate is nothing but smoke and mirrors because there's no economic data to back it up? It sure looks like that's exactly what they're saying.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you are with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right, just a reminder, the Values Bus. Yes, the Values Bus Tour going across the country, reminding voters, encouraging Christians to register and reminding them to vote in an important election coming up in 48 days. Today at 6 p.m., which gives you plenty of time to get over there because it's in Springdale, Arkansas, which is on Central Time, 6 to 8 p.m. at Ecclesia College. So you can they've changed the location. It's at the Republican County Committee meeting today at 6 p.m., new site. And then tomorrow in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, at the Oklahoma Wesleyan University, that is at 10 a.m. tomorrow. So that's the Values Bus. And to keep up with it, go to valuesbustour.com. All right, shifting gears a little bit. You know, to fight terrorism, we need a strong military to keep us safe from our enemies. Now, how has the U.S. military social experimentation, repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, allowing gender troops to serve openly in the military, and so on and so forth, how has that affected our military's readiness? Well, that's what I'll ask the general. General, the Navy this week announcing a new training that's going to happen just days before the election, and it's training not on how to fight wars, not on the military code of conduct, but rather it's transgender behavioral education. What's happened in our military?
You know, Tony, when the announcement was made to allow transgenders into the military, my first thought was, how much training time is going to be used? Valuable training time. When our military has been at war for 15 years, how much training time is going to be associated with this program? What people don't realize is when you do any social experiment in the military, there is a huge, well-developed, and extensive training program that every single person in the military has to go through, and it's not a one-time thing. It's periodic, so it could be quarterly. So you wind up spending inordinate amounts of time in a classroom getting briefed on and lectured on how you implement this policy. And what that does is it reduces the amount of time that you are spending preparing for war. Remember, MacArthur said to the cadets at West Point in 63, your mission remains fixed, determined, inviolable. It is to win the nation's wars, and we have totally lost sight of that objective.
I mean, I think you're absolutely right. People don't realize that, especially the further this is from society's norms, all right, and you get into transgenderism. I mean, that's way, way away from the mainstream of societal thought. You have to intensify the training and the education, or I should say re-education, which is essentially what the military is doing, re-educating people to believe that something that is abnormal is normal and that it should be preferred, which is essentially what it does. And something's got to give with that volume of training. It's resources, it's time. And so you're absolutely right. What happens is you have a lack of resources and time to do the military's main, the training for their main mission. So how reversible is what we see presently in our military as a result of all of these social programs from the president? How reversible is this?
Yeah, look, it is... Some of it is reversible. I can't say that it's all reversible because I honestly don't think it is. But some of it is reversible. We can stop this kind of nonsense, and that is wasting training time that does not prepare our sons and daughters for war. But it's going to take leadership in the military, both civilian and uniformed, and it's going to take leadership in the White House. And that's what I think is the key to this. The next commander-in-chief has to recognize the problem first. And you know, you have five children, and I have five children. If you knew that your son or daughter was going off to war, you would want them to have every possible opportunity to survive and succeed by being prepared before they go into combat. And what moms and dads across this country need to understand today is your children are going into combat without the benefit of a full training package. And that's why at Values Voter Summit, Tony, I showed the video of Jeremiah Denton in 1966 when he was tortured mercilessly by the Vietnamese and forced to make a statement, and he blinked the word torture in Morse code. After months of torture, and then in 2016, you've got a Naval Academy graduate, just like Denton was, who was captured by the Iranians off the coast of Iran, and in 3 hours, he was apologizing to the Iranians and thanking them for their hospitality. Let me tell you, that guy did not get the right kind of training, nor did his crew get the right kind of training. They didn't get the code of conduct training, which tells them how they operate as a prisoner of war or a detainee. But I'll guarantee you, they got all the training that was associated with these social experiments because their commander's efficiency report depended upon 100% participation in these social training programs.
Yeah, nothing, I think nothing encapsulates where our military is better than that example, juxtaposing those two. General, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I'm sure we're going to continue to track, especially the terrorist issue, as more information comes to the forefront. General, thanks for being
with
us.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, folks, when we come back, we're going to go to the phone line, so don't go away. You're listening to Washington Watch.
The family is the heart of our economy. It is the greatest generator of knowledge, attitudes, skills, and habits of the individual, and is a generator of financial savings and capital. The vast majority of small businesses begin as family businesses, which eventually become the large businesses of the nation. Families are thus the great generators of business, and they are affected profoundly by the tax code. What Washington does to the family budget has a direct effect on the well-being of millions of moms, dads, and children. Given the importance of family economic well-being and the sluggishness of economic growth, Family Research Council proposes 5 short-term but productive actions that federal policymakers can take to help moms and dads better provide for their children through tax reform. To learn more about our family-friendly tax proposals, visit frc.org/taxes.
The gay agenda, Islam, liberation theology, aggressive socialism. You ask yourself, how should I respond to these attacks on my Christian faith? How can I share Christ in a sinful culture? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. An online Master of Arts in Apologetics from WBS will prepare you to defend and share your faith in an increasingly hostile world. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning challenge culture. WBS.edu.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. James Dobson, and I want to remind you of the words Abraham Lincoln spoke at Gettysburg. He told his audience that our government is designed to be of the people, by the people, and for the people. It's our responsibility to let our voices be heard when so much is at stake. So I implore you to become involved citizens who go to the polls and cast informed votes on Election Day.
I'm a widow. I've worked for a bank for 31 years, and I've been retired now for 10 years.
Myrtle Norris comments on her experience with the AFA Foundation.
I had a lot of financial questions, and Dan Celia was, he answered my questions, and he helped me with a lot of decisions that I made. And then the charitable gift came up, and he explained that to me. I decided to get it, and I'm sure glad I did, because I know now that money is in a place that I know God wants it to be, and also get my monthly income from it. I believe in the AFA and what they're doing, because they're working for us.
Learn how the AFA Foundation can work for you. You can contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook, on our website, afafoundation.net, or call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345. Thank you for supporting the American Family Association.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com, resources up there for you, including a link to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. I'm gonna go there in just a moment. I'm gonna open up the phone lines 866-372-7234. I wonder what you think. I mean, we know this has been out there. Okay, Hillary Clinton calling, you know, Christians, Bible-believing Christians, you know, a basket of deplorables. But to actually see it in black and white in an official document from the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights to say that religious liberty is a code word for discrimination and bigotry and homophobia and all this other stuff that they said. I mean, what do you think about that? They're becoming emboldened. Or they have become emboldened under the Obama administration, but they're pushing rapidly, just like this transgender policy education program and this push that Obama wants to do before he leaves office to make sure that he does not leave one thing left in the military undone in terms of sexual norms. So anyway, we're going to open the phone lines at 866-372-7234 in just a moment. But I want to respond to Marissa sent a letter yesterday after the program. We were talking about refugees and immigration and, you know, how we needed to basically watch who came into the country. And she wrote me a very long and thoughtful letter, which I appreciate, in which I read these letters. So if you want to reach me, Tony, TonyPerkins.com. And she didn't get a chance to call in, so she said, you know, I'm a Christian, and I understand the concerns that are expressed with it. She said, but what really, and I'm going to quote from her letter, what really worries me, and it's just portions of her letter, okay, not the whole thing. What really worries me with this upcoming election is that America will shut its door completely on all refugees, especially from Syria and Somalia, because that's what we were talking about yesterday. And then she went on in the letter, she said, again, quoting from the letter, what I'm trying to say is I'm scared that eventually the U.S. will shut its doors on Syrian, Somali, and Pakistani refugees. As a Christian, I see them coming to our country as a huge opportunity to introduce unreached people groups to the saving grace of God. One of my fears, and I'm continuing to quote, one of my fears of our country is that we would start to close our doors on these refugees who are seeking safety. Now, that's just a couple of sentences out of a long letter. She's got a valid point. And I don't think anybody, even what I've heard from Donald Trump, is saying that we should eliminate all immigrants coming into this country from the Middle East, or Africa. What he has said is that we need to stop it until we can ensure that the people coming here do not want to kill us. And that's the policy I agree with. I agree with Marissa that I believe we should have an immigration policy that allows people who want to be a part of the American family to come here and to go through the process and that happen. If they love liberty and freedom and they want to be a part of this great experiment that has lasted for 240 years, then we invite them to come. But if they want to come here and undermine our liberty and change who we are, that's why the immigration policy is the way it was and why we had an immigration system, was to regulate the flow of those into the country so they could be assimilated into our country and be, if you will, Americanized. Now, our public school system used to do that. It used to teach people about America, civics. You don't find that anymore. I mean, we don't even teach our own kids in the public school system. I teach mine. We're not teaching them what it means to be American. In fact, we have leaders who find America deplorable and go around apologizing for America. So what we're saying is we have to have an immigration policy, and this is what I would support, is an immigration policy that makes sense for America. A country without borders is not a country. And we need to determine who comes in and who doesn't. And it's not discrimination to keep people out who hate you and want to kill you. Not discrimination at all. It's part of being a country. So this idea that the left has that anybody and everybody wants to come in is just crazy. It is. It's just absolutely crazy. But on the other side, I'm not saying, nor would I ever support, the idea that nobody can come here. I just think we have to vet who comes. And I, you know, as opposed to what the Obama administration, where you have, I haven't looked at the latest numbers, but when you look at the Syrian refugees, I think it was around 1% of those who have come to the country, maybe I may be off just a little bit, are actually Christians. Most of them are Muslims coming to this country and are not being fully vetted. So I just think we have to put our nation first, the security of our families first, and we can let people in as we can assimilate them in and as they want to be here and be a part of what America stands for or has historically stood for, not the last 8 years. Marissa, thank you so much for the letter. All right, 866-372-7234. We're going to go to the phone lines. And first, we're going to go to Alabama where Jimmy is on the line. Jimmy, welcome to Washington Watch.
How are you doing, Tony?
I'm doing well, Jimmy. How are you today?
I'm doing good. God bless y'all for the fight y'all are fighting, and y'all keep on fighting. I just got one comment I want to say. Hillary, if everybody was listening on when she does do her interviews, said, as a Southern Methodist, and she claims that she's a Southern Methodist, that she's a Christian, yet her beliefs are an abomination of God. But what I'm saying is they need to key in on her on that and push that subject to her.
Well, I didn't get into it with Peter, but part of what we see happening here is this quarantining of religion. The fact that, you know, they're okay with religion as long as it doesn't come outside the walls of the church or doesn't transgress the area, the space between your two ears. You can think about it. That's beliefs. You can have beliefs. In fact, the report actually says that. The report says that we've got to figure out how we can protect beliefs but regulate actions. That's one of the findings. Well, folks, I thought we were supposed to act according to our beliefs. I mean, that's what Jesus said. That's why our beliefs are so important. That's why we teach people because we want them to be impacted by their beliefs and by what they're taught. So what they're essentially saying is that, you know, it's just an exercise and it's just an empty exercise. That's what they think religion should be in this country. So, Jimmy, good point. But that's consistent with the left, is that I can, or it's kind of like the I'm pro-life, but I'm against abortion myself, but those are always big buts because there's a lot coming behind it. All right, Jimmy, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate you calling. Let's go to Louisiana where Bev is on the line. Bev, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Can you hear me?
I can. Go right ahead.
Okay. Appreciate your show. I just have a comment. It seems to me that Obama and Hillary are basically profiling Christians in under different terms and profiling us to single us out.
In what way? Explain that.
Well, with all these adjectives they're putting on that Hillary was saying, you know.
Oh, you mean like the bigoted, the homophobic, the Islamophobic?
Right. They're profiling in a very negative way Christians.
Right. If you believe the Bible on human sexuality, which is essentially what her response about the basket of deplorables, Donald Trump spoke at the event that FRC had hosted, and that was the Values Voter Summit, and that came that evening after he had spoken to that group, and she said, you know, half of his supporters are, you know, you could put them in this basket of deplorables. Well, she then started walking it back and said, well, maybe not half. What an apology. But you're right. It's a part of the left, Bev, what they do, and I've mentioned this book many times on the program, not that I'm trying to increase their sales, but Saul Alinsky in his book, Rules for Radicals, short read. It really is worth reading, but I would get it out of the library. I wouldn't buy it. And it shows you exactly how they operate. And they really haven't deviated. In fact, you can see this pattern in Scripture. It is the way darkness works. It's about stigmatizing with name-calling, marginalizing for the purpose of silencing. And that's, Bev, that's exactly what they're doing. But what we have to do is resist that by refusing to be silent. We cannot shrink back into the shadows of society simply because we have people who call us names. Not going to do it. Bev, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate you listening and calling in to Washington Watch this afternoon. Folks, it's time to speak up, okay? And if this report from the Commission on Civil Rights does not serve as a wake-up call, which is why the two commissioners who were the conservatives, actually, Peter and Gwynn, they actually voted to get it out. I believe Peter did, just so the public would know. This thing, the hearing took place in 2013 that they had. And so it's been like, you know, 3 years in the making of this report. They kept keeping it from coming out. It's good for people to, I mean, it's not the picture is not good, but it's good that we can see the picture of how late the hour is when it comes to religious liberty in this country and protecting our fundamental freedoms and how far the left has gone in attacking them. All right, we're going to work another call here. Let's go to Oklahoma where Fred is on the line. Fred, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I had a brief, simple comment regarding Muslim refugees. If they, any and all Muslims who follow their book, the Quran, they're all potential threats.
Well, if it depends on if they are strict adherence to the Quran. I mean, there could be, you know, in the Muslim faith, as in some other faiths, if you are born into a Muslim family, you're a Muslim. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you go and you practice your faith and you live by your faith. I mean, just like there are some people in this country that are Christians, but they don't go to church, they don't read the Bible. It has no application really to their lives. It's kind of quarantined to one part of their lives. Maybe they go on Sundays, maybe they go on Thanksgiving, maybe they go on Christmas and Easter, but it really doesn't interfere with how they live their life. So there are Muslims like that as well. And so I think Fred, it's easy to detect, I think, with some properly asked questions. And we've seen the polling data of those that have come to this country that upwards of close to a third would prefer to be governed under Sharia law and not the Constitution of the United States. In fact, they would resist the Constitution. Well, that's a disqualifier right there. We have no obligation to let those folks in the country. So there are ways of determining who wants to live under a system of law. And of course, the Islamic faith is more than just religion. It's more than just law. It's a political system. If they want to live under that, then it's just incompatible with the United States Constitution. See, the difference with people say, well, you want to have Christianity be the influencer. Well, frankly, it's the foundation of our country because Christianity does not impose itself on anyone. It allows people to make choices. They don't have to be adherents to Christianity. They can have religion or not have it. That's fine. But there has to be a moral foundation, and it recognizes natural law, laws of nature, nature's God. I mean, you can read that in the founding documents. So, yes, for those that would want to live by the letter of the law of the Islamic faith, you're going to have a difficult time meshing that with our Constitution and the American way of life. I just think we got to be, look, we have every right to determine who comes into this country and who does not. There's not a problem with doing that. That's the whole reason for having an immigration system. I appreciate the call. Thanks so much for listening. Again, folks, the website, TonyPerkins.com, the Values Bus out there making its way across the country, Springdale, Arkansas tonight, Bartlesville, Oklahoma tomorrow. And if you want to know when it's coming to a community near you, again, go to valuesbustour.com and you can get the latest. All right, folks, up against the clock, I want to thank you for joining us. And I do want to encourage you once again, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over to this report by the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. Look, insightful. Send a link to your pastor. Because coming up, October 3rd, is Pulpit Freedom Sunday, something I'm going to talk about later this week, just a week from this coming Sunday, when pastors across the nation are going to exercise their right to preach the full counsel of God, regardless if it's politically correct or not. Anyway, all right, folks, out of time. Lord willing, be back tomorrow. Hope you will as well. Until then, the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6 says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.